Happy Tuesday, June 20th on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. There is no off-season for the Ira Kaufman Podcast, just in case you've been wondering. Mr. Ira Kaufman, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, works nonstop, tirelessly, covering all things Bucks and all things NFL, and his podcasts, heard Tuesday and Thursday on JoeBucksFan.com, are presented by Ed Morse, Cadillac Tampa, and Ed Morse, Cadillac Brandon. The summer sales challenge is on at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. General Manager Mark Wamsley, he's challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest payments on a new Cadillac, like a 2017 ATS for only $369 a month, or a 2017 XT5 for just $399 a month. The summer sales challenge is on. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See dealer for all the details. Offer expires the end of this month. And, of course, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. When Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa challenges other dealerships, you win by taking home the lowest prices. Don't miss the Ed Morse Summer Sales Challenge. Drive off in a powerful 2017 Escalade with zero down, only $689 a month. Let us impress you at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. See EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for all the details. Just so happy that Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa is here to present, along with Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, all of Ira's work, his Monday, Wednesday, and Friday columns. And here he is. He's come out of the sauna. He's finished his push-ups. He's ready. All right, Ira, of course, you're adorned in your full Tuesday outfit, your Ed Morse gear, your polo, your hat, your socks. It's always good to see you wearing the colors. Not just here on the podcast where nobody can see them. You do wear them around town and on your weekly visit to Spectrum Sports Television. You're always sporting your Ed Morse gear.
I also have a stick carrier shirt, courtesy of the good doctor. Black shirt. It's looking sharp. Lee might have to wear that at training camp and stun you gentlemen. You never know.
Of course, we're talking about Dr. Wink, another man who outfits you and in all your clothing.
I haven't gone to Dillard's in about 6 months, man. It's beautiful.
Ira, let's get right to it. Very interesting stuff. Fascinating stuff here on the Doug Martin front. And Lee and I are absolutely aching for your sage wisdom. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is with us. We're the Joes at JoeBucksFan. Ira, you need no greater introduction. Here's the deal, Ira. Jameis Winston goes on ESPN Tallahassee last week. Talks to Jeff Cameron, who's like the almost like the Steve Dumig of Tallahassee, an iconic sports radio figure for decades. And they have a relationship. Cameron was with Jameis on draft night. You know, so there's a lot of comfort level there. And, of course, in Tallahassee, they're very big on Florida State, as you can imagine. So Cameron asked Jameis about Dalvin Cook. Hey, were you pushing for Cook? How did that go? You know, you wanted your guy in there. We wanted him. Jameis says, I lobbied hard for Dalvin Cook. And Jameis had a lot of emphasis there and went on to say, hey, I don't run the team, but I was really pushing very hard. Now, you hear that as a sage. Lee and I hear that in here. If you love Doug Martin, if you think he's the franchise guy, if he's the best guy and you love him so much, why are you lobbying for a number one pick to be your running back? Because number one picks get the rock in full time.
I'm glad we started out on this note. It gives me a chance to straighten you two cretins out. How long are you going to chew on this Doug Martin bone, gentlemen? You come up with all kinds of things to buttress your arguments. There's your word for the day, buttress. Now you're on the now you're dragging poor little Jameis Winston into this argument. Gentlemen, you can't see the forest for the trees. He went to FSU. I believe, was he on the team when Jameis Winston was there?
Yes, 1 year.
He was on the team.
Sure.
1 year. It's nothing more than reaching out to a fellow Seminole. It's got nothing to do with Doug Martin. Come on, DeKemper, you know better than that.
If that is the case, and people have brought that up since I wrote that story Saturday morning, if that is the case, he was just sticking up for a Florida State guy, why was he not pounding the drum for DeMarcus Walker, who, if anybody knows the team, it's Jameis. He knows that team needs a pass rush. You even brought it up that you thought the guy was a worthy pick. He didn't say anything about DeMarcus Walker.
Well, because,
and by the way, Walker played on that national championship team with Jameis. Cook did not.
Number one, he wasn't a first-round pick. He wasn't worthy of it.
Second-round pick.
And a second-round pick. You know, Cook's got the glamour. He knows Buck fans wanted Dalvin Cook. Isbitz, you're looking for every scrap. You're turning over every piece of paper. on this Doug Martin crusade. Some of what you say makes sense, but in this case, you're going way too far because Jameis Winston has a habit of buddying up to his the guys that he knows in Tallahassee.
First of all, there's no crusade. There's no nothing. Don't put Jameis's words in my mouth and Lee's mouth. Jameis Winston is the man who said, months later, I lobbied hard. Now, I ask you a question, Mr. Kaufman. If Florida State University had an elite number one running back, elite number one wide receiver coming out, or an elite left tackle coming out, do you think Jameis would have lobbied hard for that player in the first round?
I think he would have gave him a little bit of an advantage over some guy from Northwestern. Look, and by the way,
what the hell does that mean?
And by the way, on this Dalvin Cook thing, it turns out my information is, unless you guys want to slap me around, and it doesn't take much for to convince Isbitz to do so.
Northwestern.
The Bucks had no intentions of taking Dalvin Cook.
Is that right?
In the first round. That is my opinion, and I believe that's correct. Even if he was sitting there at 19 and O.J. Howard had been off the board, I don't think they were taking Dalvin Cook.
Wow.
Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that Jameis Winston is the most important player in the building. He's the face of the franchise, but he doesn't run the ship in terms of free agency and certainly not the draft, and I think that's a good thing. He can talk up Dalvin Cook all he wants. It is not a direct slap at Doug Martin because how do you think Doug Martin would take it if it was a slap? He'd be pissed off right now.
Well, I can't get over the fact that Jameis lobbied for a running back. Strip the name. Strip the school. That just muddies the water.
He was the biggest name coming out of Florida State in the draft.
First round.
He lobbied for a running back in the first round. That, and I'm gonna read something. And you were there when this happened, Ira. You were there when this happened. Our readers may not remember this. I'm going to read this. It was January 2016. Jameis's rookie year had just come to an end. They got pummeled by Carolina up at Carolina. Carolina obviously was heading to the Super Bowl. Jameis said this at his press conference, very emotionally. And I begin to quote, "If our coaches weren't on our butt, we wouldn't have won six games. I guarantee there are some of the coaches that want it more than some of our players. And that is the bad part. Our coaches want it. They want it. I guarantee you they are working hours. They don't even get to see their families. So I'm not here to talk about coaches. I know our coaches want it. We need to get our guys to put in the work like our coaches. Put in, and that's how you're going to be successful." Less than a year later. Mind you, Jameis said this 2016, January. Less than a year later. Where was Doug Martin? Roughly a year after Jameis uttered those very words I just quoted him, he's lobbying the general manager to draft a running back in the first round.
First things first, Isbitz. We got to keep the phones away from DeKemper because next he's going to read the Emancipation Proclamation on that little phone.
Hey, I got to give Lee credit. That was a fantastic dramatic reading.
Dramatic reading? What is this guy, Hal Holbrook? What do you mean dramatic?
It's Gettysburg Address.
Now, actually. Steve, I don't like to put you guys down because, first of all, it's too easy. And two, I don't want my listeners saying that I'm a cruel human being. But let me say this.
Please.
Mr. DeKemper. Hold on. I got to face Lee on this.
Uh-oh.
Lee, when Jameis said those famous lines that you intoned so beautifully, like a modern-day Marlon Brando.
I like the Hal Holbrook line.
Steve, Doug Martin was the second-best running back in professional football. When Jameis said,
you're right.
You think he was referring to Doug Martin at that point? Doug Martin was running his ass off.
Well, let's look.
There was plenty of other Seferian Jenkinses around who he could have been talking about.
Yeah, that's obvious. But, I mean, well, let's look what happened with Doug
Martin.
Back
me up a little bit here, Isbitz. Back me up.
Let's look what happened with Doug Martin since Jameis uttered those words. You know, apparently Doug Martin, to his credit, and I emphasize this, and I've got nothing against Doug Martin. I wrote this over the weekend on JoeBucksFan.com. I hope the guy comes back after his suspension, runs for 1,700 yards. I have nothing against Doug Martin. I have everything against non-production. And again, Doug Martin is a boom or bust kind of guy. And that's what I got a problem with. Okay, Doug Martin admitted to his credit he needed help with whatever demons he has. And I give him the utmost credit. That doesn't happen overnight. There's too much here to suggest to me that nothing's going on. All Bucks fans, and I think this is wrong as wrong could be, there's a vocal minority of Bucks fans that scream about Gerald McCoy. They associate with him with losing. But you know who personified losing more than McCoy? Because McCoy was on the 2010 team when the Bucks when they last won double digits. McCoy was on that team. There's two guys the Bucks drafted in 2012. Everybody thinks the world of them. But guess what? They never experienced a winning season since last year. And, oh, by the way, Doug Martin was partially part of that because, you know, he had his issues.
One was Doug Martin.
And the other is Lavonnie David. But those guys get a pass. But everybody screams at McCoy. So Jameis is the ultimate winner. We know that. He says this. Then we see what happened with Martin. And we have the evidence. You know, Jameis admitted he went to the light and lobbied to have him draft a running back in the first round.
What the hell? What did you feed the Kemper today?
There's something simmering behind the scenes not seeing.
All right, I'm not letting this go either.
What is going on with the Kemper?
Listen, season on the line, Lovie Smith, the Lovie Smith area, his job may be on the line, but the season on the line, Doug Martin against Chicago, second to last game of 2015, fumbled twice in critical situations. Both turnovers became scores. The Bucks lost by 5 points. Final game of the season. Doug Martin, 48 yards. Previous week, 49 yards. He did not have a strong close to that season. As great as it was, he did not put the team on his back.
They were 6-8. What kind of back? What are you talking about?
Come on, the season was over. Season was over? This is an ascending team with a rookie quarterback, second-year head coach.
And you want to wipe out the 2015 season?
No, I'm not wiping it out.
It never happened?
But you're acting like Martin finished that season on top of the world. He didn't. That's all I'm saying. Just trying to back up Lee here. So I want to clarify. You think there's nothing even to think about remotely that Jameis is lobbying to draft a running back in the first round with Doug Martin in the stable?
I think you're looking for everything can find. There's enough to pick on Doug Martin. There's enough there. You don't have to manufacture things like he's a locker room cancer.
Who, to Kemper? I'm not suggesting
to
at all.
That people don't like Doug Martin.
I'm not suggesting. Again, I like Doug Martin. He's always been a class act with me. I've asked him some really tough questions that I know that irked him, and he answered them. I give him all the credit in the world. But there's something there. There's something there for Jameis to say that and then follow up with, I lobbied for a running back. Hey, I'm about production.
When Doug Martin's good, he's very good.
How many games have they won? How many winning seasons have they won when he's been good?
I don't like to blame individual players for team struggles. I don't like that.
There's too much smoke going around here. Too much smoke to ignore.
All right, let's end it on this note. You said manufacture. That's a very strong word. I can't let that go by. We didn't manufacture what Jameis Winston said. Now, you may not like the take. I respect that you think it's all smoke and baloney, but Jameis is the one who said this, and I guarantee you this. If he was lobbying for a left tackle in the first round, all of Tampa Bay would be freaking out saying, you see, Donovan Smith is second rate. Mm-hmm. He's not the guy. Sorry, but Jameis was lobbying
for
a guy that he believes is a superstar running back to carry the rock full time for the Bucks.
Was not Jameis all on board with Adrian Peterson?
Yes.
You're reading too much into Jameis Winston.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. First of all, and God bless him. You know, I love his passion. I think that's his intangibles are what's going to make
him
great player. What's his favorite word? Amazing. Amazing. We all know that. You know,
like a Hollywood
starlet. I believe
he
used it for Dante Dye last year. Now take it easy, Isbitz. who's next? Devontae Bond? It is his favorite word. He loves it. Everybody's amazing. That's imputerly. Even you would agree with me on that.
Yep.
Look, this guy was a glamour player coming out of a glamour program, and I don't think it had that much to do with how he felt about Doug Martin as it did with a fellow Seminole who was high profile, who was expected to go in the first round, and who he knew Buck fans were clamoring for.
Mm-hmm.
Throw all that into the mix, and he called them amazing, and there you go.
And I don't disagree with what I was saying about the Florida State connection, but then if that is the case, why wasn't he also trying to get DeMarcus Walker in here? We all know they need a pass rush. He didn't say anything about DeMarcus Walker. And like Steve said, and I wrote this in the article Saturday, Jameis wasn't lobbying. This should tell people a lot. Buck's hierarchy is defending the offensive line. Jameis wasn't beating Light's desk for an offensive lineman. That should tell people something.
If Dalvin Cook would have played for South Carolina, you wouldn't have heard a peep out of Jameis Winston. Not a peep.
Not a peep. You're right. He also wouldn't have been asked the question on Tallahassee
Radio.
Yeah,
that's right.
So here we are. All right. Ira, of course.
Now that I've debunked you in our first subject, we move on.
I'll get Ira in a good mood.
Continue.
I'll get Ira in a good mood here. The word amazing?
You're going to show me Instagram? What do you got?
Ooh, well, there we go. That would detour this whole podcast.
Right, amazing is the word of the day.
Well, amazing, I wrote this once. Dick Cavett used to talk about Hollywood starlets. Why don't you have these Hollywood starlets on your show? And I'm dating myself here too, Dick Cavett. But that's in your wheelhouse, Dick Cavett. And he said, I got tired of these actresses. Oh, it was an amazing script, an amazing director, an amazing producer, an amazing co-star. And he was right on the money. To this day, Jimmy Kimmel, they'll have some actress, a Hollywood starlet, or Conan. Oh, such and such was amazing. Script was amazing. And the location was amazing.
Steve, I don't care what Raquel Welch would have said in 1972. She belonged on a couch next to Dick Cavett. I'm sticking with
me. But notice he didn't bring up the cat episode with Carson?
No, I didn't.
We can't go there.
That was a classic one. All right, you may continue, Steve.
I got no idea what you're talking about, but that's fine. All right. So, of course, we're grateful. As I'm listening to these things I don't know about, I'm visiting EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com, checking out all the amazing June offers. So much going on. The summer sales challenge that's happening. It's really fantastic. And, Ira, let's move over to...
Are we done with Doug Martin?
We're done with Doug Martin for today. Enough of you. Okay. although we do have some great Doug Martin stuff, some fresh Doug Martin stuff coming in our next podcast. We're sorting that out right now. But very interesting stuff coming next podcast. Don't want to miss it Thursday on JoeBucksFan.com in the morning with a special guest. Now, Ira, Anquan Boldin, he spoke to the Detroit Free Press. And this guy, of course, is the ninth leading pass catcher in NFL history, a guy you're going to be voting on someday. He has the numbers. Anquan Boldin told Detroit Free Press that he wants to play in Florida. That's where he'd like to go back home. Now, he grew up here, played for Florida State. So Anquan Boldin had a great season last year, Ira. 67 catches, 8 touchdowns, and only 95 targets. The Bucs wish they had a guy who had 67 catches and 95 targets. Now, he didn't have a ton of yardage, but he fit in on a playoff team, and they said a lot of great things about him. But he wasn't sure if he wanted to come back. And he did this sort of the year before. So I ask you this. Anquan Boldin can play football, considered a great locker room guy. The Bucs have what some might consider loose meat at the number 5 receiver position. Why not sign Anquan Boldin and bring him in here?
Are we now going to discuss the lack of talent at the 5th wide receiver position on this football team? 4 years ago, we were talking about they don't have a middle linebacker, they don't have a left tackle, they don't have a quarterback. And now, Isbitz is all into the 5th wide receiver on this football team. Now look, Bolden's had a very nice career. Does he fit in with the Bucs? No, he does not. Why? What, Adam Humphries had a bad year? Chris Godwin looks bad in OTAs? They're raving about this
guy. Are the 3 and 4 receivers.
Where is Boldin going to get his catches? Where's he going to get his touches, Steve? We're talking about playing 2 tight end alignments. I don't know if Humphries is going to get his touches. DeKemper, help me out here. Are we really going to talk about Anquan Boldin as a major contributor in Tampa?
Well, no, I don't think Steve is even suggesting that. Steve, you know, here's a guy who's looking for a job. Everybody talks about it. We talk about intangibles with Jameis. Oh, by the way, there's another Florida State guy we're going to talk about.
Let him go to the Dolphins where he can catch 55 balls.
Who do you trust? Well, who do you trust? Dante Dye, Anquan Boldin. Who do you trust? Bernard Reedy, Anquan Boldin.
You got to pay the man, Steve. You got to pay the man.
What's our salary cap situation?
You got to pay the man for being a 5th receiver.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
You're very quick to spend the Glazers' money over there, Steven. Very, very quick.
Well, you say you got to pay the man to be a 5th receiver. Obviously, Jason Light's not going to pay the guy first string money. Bucks like to say, can't get enough good players. Well, you know, again, who do you trust?
Could you be stunting the growth of Godwin and Humphries?
No. I don't think anyone is suggesting this guy would be above the depth chart on Godwin or Humphries. If we're talking about, and Steve was specific about this, number 5 receiver. You're looking for a number 5 receiver, and this guy's looking for a job. He's a good locker room guy. Again, who do you trust?
Well,
Bernard Reedy?
Steve, in the words of Dirk Cutter, can never have too many good football players.
Well, I'll throw this out there. First, I'm not lobbying to...
I don't think it makes sense, but...
I'm not lobbying to sign him. But how do you not bring him in? You know, there are plenty of teams in this league who keep 6 receivers. It's not exactly unheard of and uncommon. So, sure, you're stunning the growth, not of Humphries and Godwin, because they're going to get their touches. But, sure, if you want to develop one of these guys, the Freddie Martino...
Well, I'm not worried about that. Well, I understand.
Exactly.
Who's that CFL legend? The guy from Texas A&M.
So, you know, last year...
Walker.
Yeah, see a Darrell Walker. Insert your name, Bernard Reedy.
Insert your neighbor.
No, insert. I said insert your. Well, I thought I said insert your name, but insert your neighbor too.
And in case of
insert your neighbor.
In case of injury, he moves up the chart and he can be a contributor.
Well, hey, last year Bernard Reedy was someone's neighbor. That's all he was.
I want him dirt cheap. If I get him, I want him dirt cheap.
Bobo Wilson. You know, there's. I don't think anyone's going to cry that. Oh gosh, how did we let this guy go? This gem in the making that we let him go. To sign Anquan Boldin.
Does Boldin want to come to a team and be a number five receiver?
Well, he wants to be in Florida, doesn't he?
If he wants to be in Florida and he understands that he's playing for a paycheck to keep going, if he wants a ring, he knows the Hall of Fame is a difficult territory. Especially receivers know that after what's happened with Terrell Owens. Padding those numbers don't hurt. And last year, I'm looking it up here as we speak, he made $2.75 million. So let's say you could get him for $2.2. You got to pay Reedy or one of these guys $600,000-$700,000 anyway, $500,000.
Give me Bolden's numbers last year.
I just did. 67 catches on 95 targets. That's got to be one of the most reliable in the league.
How many yards?
I don't have the yardage, but it was only about 600 and eight touchdowns.
So he is a possession receiver. That's his reputation.
That's what he is now.
And a damn good one. And a damn good one.
He's depth. If he's willing to play, if you get him on the phone, here's what I say. If you get him on the phone and he says, I'm willing to be a number five guy, be a locker room guy, and if you can't keep me out of the lineup, so be it. Then bring him in for a tryout. If he doesn't want to be the number five guy. But
guys want to play, Steve. Guys want to play. If he's got a chance to go to Miami, which is not a bad team, probably the same position as the Bucs. You know, they made the playoffs last year. Bucs didn't. Lee, they got less depth at receiver than the Bucs do. So, you know, depend on Miami's interest. But Boldin wants to play, Steve. The guy is, you know, maybe be in a Hall of Fame conversation when his playing days are over. Personally, I don't think he's going to get in. He was very good. Maybe like a Hines Ward. Hines Ward is going to have trouble getting in.
I know. Not in a bad example.
Not in a bad example.
Hines Ward might have been a little bit better. But.
So I'm not sure how much Boldin would be interested in the Bucs. That's my point.
Here's one for you. And you know Tom Coughlin better than Isbitz. Isbitz talked to him once.
Right.
So they're buddies now. But you've talked to Coughlin more than once.
Oh, yeah. He's told me to get away from him a couple of times.
Boldin just seems like a Coughlin kind of guy. Lunch pail, work your tail off, good dude, yes sir, no sir. He just seems like a Coughlin kind of guy. Now, obviously, Boldin wants to come back to Florida. I think he's from Jacksonville. No. I take it back. He's from where they chase rabbits.
South Florida, said the
where the Muck. You know, the Muck Boys. He's from there. But, I mean, he wants to be in Florida. He just seems like a Coughlin kind of guy. I don't know.
I just think it's going to come down to he'll have a few suitors because, as Steve said, he's got a little left in the tank. Steve's right about that. The Dolphins are not known for their gala receivers. And since the Bucs have bolstered that position, you know, by a significant margin in the offseason, I don't think that makes the Bucs the best fit for Boldin.
Dolphins are top-heavy at receiver. Like you said, they don't have the depth of the Bucs, but they're top-heavy.
All right, Ira. Now, let me take you in a different direction.
Thank you.
This last week on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Ross Tucker, who hosts every morning, former offensive lineman, played 7 years, not any kind of standout player, but he played in the league, Princeton grad. He was co-hosting with Booger McFarland, who obviously we all know his history. Now, Ross Tucker got on Simeon Rice. Miles Garrett was the discussion. And they were talking about the effort of Miles Garrett and how Booger was very hard on Garrett before the draft. He had watched Garrett a lot at LSU and was talking about his maybe some lack of desire there.
Some loafing-ish
kind of play. You know, not having that NFL monster heart. And that brought Tucker to Simeon Rice, saying, I've never seen a guy loaf like Simeon Rice against the run. And he talked about playing against Rice, studying film in preparation of Rice. He even was specific to a certain year, certain film, and a certain game. That's how much it stuck in Tucker's head. He wasn't just throwing it out there. So he had some laughs about it, and he didn't discount Simeon's ability as a pass rusher. And Booger is there listening to this, and they're conversing. He didn't dispute it.
That is the critical point.
He did not dispute it. Booger played with this guy for years. You know, the deal. So there, Booger made a comment like, there's a reason he's not being considered for the Hall of Fame like he might be. And Tucker, you know, of course, was right there with him. So I ask you, what say you, Hall of Fame voter of Tampa Bay?
Booger's silence is deafening. on that point. I put a lot more stock in that than what Russ Tucker said. And you write the history of football, Russ Tucker's name's not going to be in that book. I don't care if it's 1,000.
Unless he writes it.
It could be 1,100 pages. You ain't going to find him. But I'll tell you this. I know Simeon well. You know, he's a filmmaker now. I've seen his films. They're not bad. Yeah. They're not bad. Was he strong against the run? He was not. He was not. Was he one hell of a pass rusher? Yes, he was. He was as good with that strip sack as anybody. Jason Taylor comes to mind. That's one reason Jason Taylor now has a bust in Canton. He was great at that blind side. And so was Simeon, forcing that fumble. Besides the sack, forced fumble, ball's on the ground. That's bigger than a sack. So he doesn't have a reputation as being a good run stuffer. But you know what? There's a lot of defensive ends that were very good pass rushers. That does separate the Michael Strahans, who was very good on both. But Simeon Rice would have went crazy. If he ever hears that tape, he'll call Russ Tucker's show, and he'll lit a fire under Booger's ass that you never heard. Because Simeon Rice, and that's what makes Simeon Simeon. He says you can't have a Hall of Fame without 97 in there. It's diminished. He thinks he belongs with Deacon Jones. That's what he says. I don't know if he believes it, but that's what he's there with Reggie White, Bruce Smith, and Deacon Jones. Yeah, that's Simeon Rice. So was he strong against the run? He wasn't strong. Wasn't the worst I've ever seen, Lee. But I don't want Ross Tucker as the guy that I'm putting a lot of stock in.
Well, he did come up with some specifics. I mean, I know what you're saying, Ira, and a lot of fans have brought that up too, that, well, who's Ross Tucker? I mean, well, just because the guy isn't mentioned for a bust in Canton doesn't mean his information is caca. I mean, he brought very specific examples. I mean, he probably lined up against
Well,
Rice.
Simeon played every game for a historic 2002 defense that I'll stack up with almost any. And if he was that bad against the run, Lee, they would have ran right at him with a little success.
Yeah, like you, I'm a proponent of Rice being a Hall of Fame. Don't take us the wrong way. I love Simeon Rice. But I do remember when the Bucs acquired him, Richard McKay was talking about the reputation that Rice had.
He had a reputation in Arizona. Yep.
So, I mean, if I remember the Bucs general manager talking about that when they acquired him, that just reinforces what Tucker said. Now, I got to go back to something here. Ira said the evidence that Simeon might not have been 100% on the run was what Booger McFarland didn't say. Yet you, hound, you, Mr. Canton, custodian of Canton, you hound Isbitz and I for directly quoting Jameis Winston on Dalvin Cook.
Well,
come on now.
Well, Booger doesn't say everybody's amazing. He doesn't say everybody's amazing. He certainly didn't say Simeon Rice was amazing. I just thought, you know, a teammate of Simeon who heard that kind of diatribe, tearing
didn't
down Rice,
defense,
said
yeah.
go to his defense.
You know? All right, Calvin.
Shame on you, Booger.
We're learning how you operate here at the Ira Kaufman podcast.
I'm very selective.
Now, we have a couple more things to get to, but first, if you're listening to the podcast like most people do on their phones, most people listen on their mobile device, take 35 seconds and leave a review of the podcast on iTunes, on Podbean. Leave a comment, leave some criticism, leave some love, leave whatever you want, but, you know, get involved. Looks good. We like it. Ira likes the feedback. Share some love. There's some great love out there. And leave a review on iTunes. You know what? It's your chance to sort of call into the podcast, if you will. And you know what? If there's even a topic you want to discuss, put that in your review. Say, hey, Kaufman, you never discuss Luke Stocker and his tremendous contributions to Bucks fandom. All right. So now, Ira, I'm going to shift you over to a little quote that Jameis had that had nothing to do with Doug Martin. Jameis, when he was talking on ESPN Tallahassee, he said about the defense, he said we wouldn't have been in a couple of those games late in the stretch when we went on a 5-game winning streak. So you and Lee have had the argument before. I stand neutral on this because I think it's both. But you've said it is the Bucs' defense that failed them down the stretch of the season. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I have said that.
And Lee has said it is the I'm just clarifying. Lee has said it is the offense which failed the Bucs last year and cost them the playoffs. And here's Jameis essentially hanging in Lee's direction here, saying the defense is what kept us in the streak and in late in the game.
That's Jameis being Jameis, Lee.
Here we go.
Now, hold on. I'm not saying the offense was faultless and ran like purred like a machine down the stretch. I'm not saying that. Against Dallas, the offense wasn't very good.
No.
In New Orleans, the offense wasn't bad. They scored 24 points, I think. Lost 31-24. But I go back, Lee. Let me make it simple for you gentlemen, because that's how you tend to understand things.
Yeah, we're simple
when it's simple. job one, contain Ezekiel Elliott. You know how you talk about checking the boxes? No check on that box. Number two, make Dak Prescott uncomfortable. You didn't check that. He threw 36 times, four balls hit the ground. Four. That is incomprehensible. So
even for Lovie Smith.
Now we go on to New Orleans, where they made Drew Brees look like a clown. They made him look like Blaine Gabbert 2 weeks before that.
Oh.
And here they go into the Superdome, a game they got to win. And there's no pressure on Brees. There's plenty of pressure on the Bucs to win. Mm-hmm. No pressure on Brees. And there's no pressure on Brees when he drops back the pass. And Mark Ingram runs for almost 100 yards. That makes it even harder because you didn't make him one-dimensional. So Saints score 31. Cowboys run all over the Bucs. And the defense rests, Mr. DeKemper. What do you got to say about the offense?
Well, both those games are one-score games. Drew Brees scoring points in on his home turf, the guy's in the Hall of Fame. You almost expect that. But it was still a one-score game. Dallas, like you said, I don't disagree with what you're saying. He did everything he wanted to do. Elliott, well, who stopped Ezekiel Elliott last year? You know, still, one-score game. And what did the Bucs do in the fourth quarter of both those games? Total of three points. One field goal total.
And
both
I still remember Winston missing Mike Evans down that sideline, Lee. So do you.
I'm not saying the defense was 70 Steelers-like. No, they were not. They kept them in the game. If you give an offense a chance to win, the offense should take advantage of that. They didn't either. They didn't either.
Steve, let me clarify my bigger point. The reason I'm going to focus on the defense, number one, I don't think they played well in those two games. But I thought they were carrying the team during the five-game winning streak. And that's why I thought it was so glaring, because the offense was okay during the winning streak. Yeah. It was okay in Kansas City. It was okay against Seattle. But defense was carrying the day, Steve, and then they dropped off.
Like I say, I'm Switzerland on this.
When are you ever Switzerland?
Well, look,
you're more like Guam. You're not Switzerland.
Guam. He's owned then. He's a territory.
Both ends of the ball failed them miserably. I mean, Dallas, I believe, was number one last year, worst in allowing completions. Rod Marinelli playing his Lovie Smith brand of allow 70% completions. Dallas was right up there. Bucs couldn't do anything against them whatsoever. Couldn't run the ball. 276 total yards in that game.
Not enough.
And the defense was dreadful. I mean, it was dreadful. And so they both failed down the stretch. But
They kept holding Dallas to field goals, though, right?
But
Steve,
they'd
keep the Bucs in the game. They held them to field goals. They gave up a lot of yards.
I do lean more in Lee's direction was the offense that failed
on principle.
Team.
On principle.
No, on reality. But
he's your business partner.
No.
It's like Jameis sticking up for another Seminole. I understand that.
I will give you two names why the Bucs lost to the Saints. Cam Brake got hurt. Golston didn't play. And you were talking about Ingram. If I remember right, Ingram exposed the Bucs on the left side of the line, which is where Golston would have lined up, if I remember correctly. At that game. Those were two significant factors.
You know,
Golston's so good on the run, he wasn't available. Brake got hurt in that game.
You know, to Lee's point, and I don't, you know, you know me, I don't like to concur
uh-oh.
With Mr. DeKemper. But, Steve, I don't think it's a crazy stretch. When the Bucs reviewed the 2016 season, which they do in great detail, the fact that Golston wasn't there and this guy ran wild for the Saints, I think helped Golston get another contract.
That's a good point.
Right then and there.
I think he was getting another contract anyway.
It didn't hurt, Steve.
I mean, let's face
leverage.
Leverage. Of course it didn't hurt, but they still didn't pay him like a pass rusher. He was paid as a run-stuffing defensive end. Pass rushers, good ones, young ones, make almost double the money Golston got. So they paid him appropriately, and hopefully he's not one of these guys who cashes the big check and, you know, things happen that happen sometimes. So I don't think he will be, but you never know.
And once again, you start a topic on this delightful podcast with a quote from Jameis Winston. What are you going to do when Winston clams up for 5 weeks? What are you going to do?
Ira, would you prefer that we quote Ryan Smith? I mean, come on. Get out of here. All right. Now, one little nugget before we head out. Dirk Koetter was asked about injuries post-OTAs, post-minicamp. He was asked about injuries heading into training camp. And Koetter sort of said something interesting. I'm not going to quote him here. I don't want to upset you. He said something like to the effect, well, injuries, you know, guys who are ready will be ready for training camp, guys who won't. He said something to the effect of, well, last year I was wrong about projecting who would be ready for camp for the start of camp and who wouldn't. So he said, I'm not going to go there. Now, to me, that was a little bit of an interesting red flag. Sounded like behind the scenes, maybe some guys they think are more ready than they thought and some guys are delayed. And I thought that was interesting. What do you make of that?
It could be more mind games by Mr. Koetter, of which you think he has an endless supply. Maybe that's a message he wants to send to players. Hey, surprise me. Guys that I don't think are going to be in shape, guys that I don't think like to practice, like Mr. Iverson Baker, show up in shape, ready to go. You know, it's tough to read everything into what Cutter's really meaning, Lee, because sometimes he says something, you take it at face value, but there's a second layer behind it. Koetter is, he's got a little Machiavelli in there. There's another one. You can't spell it, DeKemper. Not even close.
M-A-C-H, I know that
well,
much.
Well, look at you. It's not raisin. It's not raisin, my man.
M-A-C-H-E, am I right, so far?
We'll see. I expect these guys, by and large, to show up ready for camp, and I'll tell you why. There's a real sense of excitement around this team.
Yeah.
Not just the stick carriers. It's in the walls of one buck. And we feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody we talk to,
do. Last week on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Cam Brate was on with Pat Kerwin, your friend Pat Kerwin, and Jim Miller, who I think he played with the Bucks just long enough to soil a practice jersey. And he said, he goes, we're ready for the next level. We're ready for the next level. You know, he was talking about how the offense is advanced, and you could sense the excitement in his voice.
Even DeMar Dotson's talking playoffs, Steve. Dot's got playoffs on his mind. How could he not?
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy, I guess I could use this term, you almost have to feel for him. He's the senior most player on the Bucks.
Longest tenured.
Longest tenured. And look at the dreck he's played with and on and how the woeful teams they've played.
And he was not a starter on the 2010 team, which is the winning record, the only one until last year. And he didn't really feel part of that. He was not a starter. Until a few years later. Don't give me that look.
I don't feel bad for Dotson. The guy's probably made $10 million, right? He's got a nice career.
Yeah, but a good guy like that, you want to see him, you know, what I'm see saying a playoffs is, like Donald
guys,
Penn.
These guys want to finish what they started last year. And the question is, does one season bleed into another? We're going to have more answers on future podcasts with that.
Yeah, we will dive into that. And, Ira, hope you enjoyed your Father's Day, your Riesling.
Got a call from my son. Nothing wrong with that. Out in Colorado.
Nice, nice.
You know, he's complaining it's 92 in the shade over there. I told him, come on, you know what Tampa's like. This ain't no bargain. He loves it out there. He may not come home, Steve, at the end of the summer.
Am I inaccurate? The Pride of River Ridge?
The Pride of River Ridge. We're going out there to visit next month. But no, we will not miss a podcast, and we will not miss a column. Get out of here, Kaufman.
No selfies in the marijuana dispensaries, Ira. Oh. We don't need that circulating. So,
do Ezekiel Elliott.
You have sponsors. We have a character clause.
I might go to Utah and get on a 4x4 off-track vehicle. You a little worried about that? Should I take out some insurance?
Of course I'm worried about that. Where are you going to go? Mountainside? You going to race the donkeys? What are you going to do?
No, they got something Archers National Park out there. You trust me in an off-track vehicle, Steve?
Well, you don't trust me on the streets of Pinellas County.
I can't drive my Gremlin. I'm having trouble.
All right, get out of here.